Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Adam Mildred Stoker. How are you, Adam?
You know what? I was good until you gave me Mildred as my middle name.
You know, that's my grandmother's name, so I hope you're not hating on it.
That made it worse. That honestly made it worse.
Oh, wow. May she rest in peace. Lord, you're brutal today.
I'm coming in hot.
Wow. So, see, we're joined today with C.A. Clark. C.A., how are you, my friend?
I am great. Glad to be back.
Yeah, I'm sorry you just had to witness him like speaking ill of the dead like that. But we've got a new shtick where I'm trying to guess his middle name. I know it begins with M. And so we're going to, each episode, I'm going to have a stab at it.
Mind you, C.A., this was his second try, and he went for Mildred.
I'll be honest.
Seems like a totally legit yeah, option there.
You never know. I don't know how they do it in Utah. I'm not sure. So
yeah,
I kind of remember what I did the first time, to be honest, Adam. So you'd have to remind me. It's like Montague or Montgomery or something like that.
You're going to want to write those down, I think.
Yeah, no. Have you ever watched or listened to the show? See, hey, there's no notes. It is not allowed. It's just absolutely no writing down stuff.
Any appearance of sophistication is a problem for this show.
Okay. 100%. Yeah. But other than CA, of course, because you are very sophisticated, especially when it comes to AI. Sure. So we're going to be talking a little bit today about the gap between the actual capabilities of AI and the adoption, you know, both on the DMO side, but also on the consumer side. So it's going to be a fun little, let's call it a romp today. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be a romp in AI conversation. Yeah, it's been a day, boys. Can you tell already? This is already off the rails. Yeah. But before we get into that, Adam, did you fix your computer after last week?
I did not, but I've rigged it up to where my laptop is working the way I used to use my desktop. So we're doing all right.
Okay. Did you ever figure out what you did to your desktop?
Nope. Still in the shop.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah. Mm. You're probably working it too hard or something. But anyway, yeah, maybe it's
too much
this
compute.
Too many jingles or something, but it is time for the greatest jingle in all of entertainment.
The jingle virus was on the computer. That's what it was.
That's right. The Stu's News virus is as viral as the Anna Kournikova virus was back in the 90s. So, hey, Adam, we're not hearing it, man. So you messed up. Yeah, you're playing it.
I was really enjoying it. I want you to know that.
Just like, hum it.
Let's see. Yeah. Well, I sang it last week, CA. You missed out.
Yeah, it was live. You know what's crazy? Like, we just picked up all these new listeners, Adam, because we did a couple of live events, and just the stats are out of control. Like, January was our number one month. Then February was our number one month. Now March is on track to be our number one month. We're just seeing constant growth. But
do you want to know why?
Well, it's not because of this episode.
It's the
Look at that grin on his face. Oh, man.
Hey, I got to tell you something.
Do you want to wait until the music starts before you tell
me? I don't know. Yeah, we'll wait. Okay.
I think we just lost all our audience, I'll be honest, all the ones we picked up.
So I had the opportunity to go to One West Tourism Alliance's MarTech Summit this past week in Oceanside, California. Great place to be if you're not in Myrtle Beach. And when we were out there, I had a good friend of mine named Wes Ray, who runs the Visit Lodi in California DMO. And he said, hey, I've been listening to Destination Discourse. And he said two things. He said, number one, I think I agree with you more than I agree with Stuart most of the time.
Okay.
And immediately he became my favorite listener. Okay.
Wow.
So then,
sycophants. Yeah. That's true.
I see how that's going to work.
The second thing he said is, I love the jingle. It gets better every time. Don't lose the jingle.
Well, so I think you just proved to me that he's got poor taste, which is why he probably agrees with you more than he agrees with me. So it checks out. Absolutely checks out. Although, you know, I did sit down to dinner at Marcom and someone told me they loved the show and that they were a big fan of Adam's. And I'm like, I'm right here. So
do you not see me?
I'm right here. Right, I literally said to her, I was like, I'm right here. So
I'm telling you, these desties are just getting smarter and smarter and smarter.
Maybe I'm going to have to pick a different shtick. I'm going to have to not be the mean guy anymore. So people start to actually like me or something. Yeah. I don't know. It's weird.
Anything helps.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what isn't helping. See how I'm segueing so brilliantly today?
Really good.
It was amazing.
To the jobs results that just came out from the Labor Statistics Bureau, and it's not looking good. You know, there was a surprise dip, a loss of 92,000 jobs in February, which not a lot of people were predicting, although I feel like the warning signs have been there for a little while, and we've had a lot of announcements from tech jobs. What's interesting now is it's beginning to proliferate out. You've seen some big hospitality companies. Folks like Oracle are getting ready to lay off a bunch of people too. So it's not just the AI companies or the big tech companies that are laying off folks. But, you know, we've been sort of hearing this rumbling for a long time that AI is going to affect the jobs market a lot. And I think we're beginning to see a little bit of that. And there's varying degrees of blame being cast on whether this is AI or it's not. But my feeling is we're probably going to see in the short term a good bit of pain around jobs. And we're going to see a lot of that sort of entry level and even white collar service jobs disappear in the short term. And one of the things that occurred to me today when I was reading about this, which I haven't heard people talking about, is how much of the tourism industry is actually propped up by this sector, you know, when it comes to especially inner city travel, business travel. I mean, we just got back from a couple of conferences, right? But if the jobs market is shrinking and it's, you know, the types of folks that are typically traveling for sales or for conferences or trade shows and stuff like that, like it could mean that there's going to be a reduced demand on travel just from that sector alone. And it's something that I hadn't really heard anyone talk about. But so I wanted to have a quick chat about that. Adam, any initial response?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of argument over the last 6 months about whether or not jobs is going to be majorly affected by AI. And I know you and I both listen to the All In podcast, and there's actually been a debate happening almost weekly on that show between David Sachs, the AI czar for the current administration, and Jason Calacanis, who is the moderator of the show, self-proclaimed world greatest moderator. But anyway, I won't go too far into their shtick. But I've heard them argue about it, and you know, David Sachs has tended consistently to say, well, this job loss thing is a myth because there's going to be so much opportunity created. And mm-hmm. while even if what he's saying, even if that may be true, the problem that you run into is anytime there's a major market shift like this, the people who lose their job on the front end of the shift, there's a gap between those people and the opportunity that's created on the back end. And there's some major shifting and evolution that has to happen in order to get those people from the layoff line to the opportunity line. And I think that's where the economic pain is going to be. I think that there is a lot of opportunity coming from AI. And I actually think the economy will likely grow as a result of AI in general, right? But no, I think the problem is in the middle of this shift, there's going to be a lot of so-called collateral damage, which is people on the front end of losing their jobs. And one of the main thing that I'm concerned about is what I would call the bottom rung of the ladder, the entry-level position. I think we're going to have an industry full of white-collar jobs that don't support the entry-level group coming out of school right now that trained to receive a white-collar job. But AI is making it more competitive for them to get those entry-level jobs. And of course, they'll adapt. I think they'll evolve. But again, we're in the middle of that shift where there's going to be some collateral damage, and I think it's going to cause some pain.
Yeah, it's short-term disruption, right? And I tend to agree with you that long-term, I think things will equalize. I think we'll see the cost of production drop dramatically. And you got a lot of folks out there, including Elon, talking about the world of abundance that's coming, right? When machines...
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Yeah, but I mean, I can see the argument, right? When machines in AI are sort of driving production of everything, the cost goes down dramatically when you don't have human labor costs, right? But that's sort of the argument he's making.
But who captures that value? Like Elon is saying, well, yeah, that's going to make the cost go to zero. I think that's going to increase profit margins for these major tech companies. Absolutely. Will the consumer feel it to the level where our cost of living is going to drop significantly? That's never happened before.
It hasn't, but we've never had this kind of disruption. Well, let's let CA sort of weigh in on this. Consider he's more knowledgeable than either of us on this subject.
I don't know about that. You know, I mean, one of the things that I think is really muddy about this right now from a jobs perspective is there's a lot of like, and this is actually related to the topic that we're meant to be talking about today, because there's like misalignments on how we talk about things. And so the part that's muddy about jobs, I think we can agree that there are jobs, that there's job loss, right? Like clearly that part is happening. Why exactly that's happening is kind of a different and muddier question, because I think there are some of these layoffs that are sort of either explicitly or implicitly kind of blamed on AI technology because it's a convenient answer right now. I'm not saying that that isn't like, I'm a believer, right, that there are going to be fundamental changes in the jobs market and how, you know, employment and like I believe all of that. I just don't know how much of that is actually true right now and how much of that is performative right now. What we can agree is that that there is job loss, and that a lot of that job loss overlaps with the same kind of people that we're interested in from a travel and tourism perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And that hasn't necessarily happened at scale, right, in the past. And so I does raise a bunch of different questions about travel, right? And, you know, we've seen this in the past. We've seen like economic downturns, and we've seen, you know, trickle down, people that would have gone overseas go to the Caribbean, or people that go would have gone to the Caribbean go to Florida, right? Or they go to Myrtle Beach, or they go, right? Like there's this like compression where, so probably we're going to see some of that. How far does it go is a totally different question, right? And then connecting to this, you talked a little bit about the bottom rung. And I think, so I actually have a slightly different view on the bottom rung issue right now, is that I think there's a good chance that some of the most employable people are going to be Gen Z people who just came out of college, right? There's this argument that says that those kinds of jobs don't exist anymore, because the like internship or the junior associate kind of a thing doesn't exist anymore because Cloud Cowork is doing that. I think that's looking at the model. I think that's one way to look at the model, but I think that's the sort of traditional way that we've looked at that model, of that sort of verticality where you climb. I don't think that's true anymore. I think what's going to be true is this sort of like zigzagging back and forth. The people who have multiple experiences are more valuable than the ones that have the vertical experiences. And I've been thinking about this a lot, is the like, what sort of mentality do we need as an organization or as individuals to be able to deal with something that is not a change, but like perma change? And the more I probe this, the more it aligns with the mindset of Gen Z. So that, I'll give you one of the examples, and I'm like jumping ahead into the other part of this conversation. I'm not as good with the segue. I'm not as practiced there. One of the things, so I asked this question, I said like, okay, what other kinds of systems are there that deal with this like constant change, right? So many variables, has to have like a framework, but it also, that framework has to be like, well, we don't know what any of the variables are, and the variables could change minute by minute. And so I was, you know, I thought about like military, I thought about racing, like that, where are places where you know that you have to have a strategy, but that strategy has to just be like this, right? Change all the time. One of the ones that I found that is super fascinating is esports. And if you think about, so the people that I talk to that are like steeped in that kind of esports, you know, competitive thing, are Gen Z, and they have exactly that sort of mental model of saying that the strategy is not, there's no 5-year strategy, man. Like the strategy is today. This is what we have today. This is what we have to deal with. This is the objective that we're trying to do. How do we use the tools that we have in order to achieve that objective? And that mentality is exactly what we need for AI, right? For it to be able to action AI in an organization, that's exactly the mentality that we need. So the problem is that kid who comes out of college, who was a collegiate esports player. And I have a couple of people at Miles that happen to be that, right? That kid who comes out of a collegiate esports has the right mentality, but doesn't have any idea what our business is or who our customers are or what they care about. And if we can find a way to connect those, that's the magic unlock right there. So all of that to say, I don't know that I agree that that bottom rung is no longer relevant. I'm not sure that I think maybe the whole ladder is irrelevant and that we're thinking about it the wrong way. And actually those are the kids that are more employable than the people who are halfway up the ladder, who then don't know how to think in that way.
Well, there's a need for them. There's a gap in the current workforce structure, and it's that, you know, we have the institutional knowledge, we have the wisdom, the experience of what has been, but most companies and organizations I'm talking to are really freaking out about what to do now, right? How do I take all this new stuff and incorporate it into, and what does it mean in terms of change? And so I agree with you. I think the younger really, it's going to be people that are tech savvy and not afraid of technology, people who are scrappy and agile, and people who are resilient, right? I don't know that Gen Z is the most resilient necessarily, but I think they're certainly scrappy in a lot of ways and agile, right? And they're very entrepreneurial for sure. And so I feel like if I was graduating college right now, I would be doubling down, or even if leaving high school, I'd be doubling down on my knowledge of AI tools that exist, and then going to businesses as a resource that can help them integrate these solutions into their current workflows, but ultimately lead to a better. So there's going to have to be this pairing of, you know, if you go back to books like Tipping Point, where they talk about like you put a maven together with a connector or something like that. I think we're going to have this new paradigm where you have like the technologist solutions person with the institutional knowledge person, and then you have to bridge that into what does the new blueprint look like. And I do think it could be anyone, but it's more likely to be the younger folks that are going to be embracing that kind of approach.
Yeah.
There's a huge opportunity there for sure.
Yeah.
I want to give you just a couple of thoughts related to that bottom rung, because I agree with CA that the ladder itself may no longer be relevant. I think that's a powerful statement you just made. I believe that what's going to happen to a lot of these Gen Z people who are coming out of school and having a hard time finding employment, I think it's actually going to force them into entrepreneurship, which I actually think is going to help the economy a lot. Instead of them looking at a ladder and saying, I got to start at the bottom and work my way up, I think you're going to see 1 to 3 person Gen Z teams over the next 5 years develop some really unique innovations. And I think I think it will actually really mess up the ladder system that we've built, where people start at the bottom and work their way up, because I think these Gen Z companies are going to probably move faster than a lot of the incumbents that have been around, and that's going to lead to major disruption.
Yeah, especially like if you think about folks like HubSpot and Salesforce, these like really entrenched CRM kind of solutions, where a team of 2 or 3 could have an 80% match product within a couple of weeks, you know, today. And so I think we're in for disruption, especially on the software side and solution side. But I agree with you too. Yeah. I think that the opportunity with e-commerce and other direct to consumer now, especially if you sort of tie the technology side with the social media side, which they're, you know, obviously savvy with, you can build an audience you can build a product and an audience in a platform really quickly. I mean, you did it. You talked about it last episode. You did it in 24 hours at a trade show last week, Adam. So yeah, it's really cool. So let's shift a little bit. Like, I mean, we already sort of started teasing it, but I don't know, CA, if you have a thesis per se, but you are sort of at the forefront. I'd say you and people like Jeanette Rausch are the tip of the spear in our industry when it comes to just staying abreast of AI and the you know, all of the latest. And it's hard to keep up with, and it seems like it's accelerating. And yet Adam and I were at a conference 2 or 3 weeks ago now, and we asked the audience how many folks had an AI policy, and I don't know, 5-10% said they did.
It was low. You know,
three years after ChatGPT's out, and they don't have an AI policy. So there's clearly a disconnect here. Most people are using AI to make themselves sound smarter in emails, but I think it's coming across as inauthentic in a lot of cases when people aren't using it the right way. They're just copy and pasting without really putting their own personal spin on it. So where's the disconnect? Like, where is the technology at today for DMOs and for visitors? And what are the barriers that are still preventing us from adopting it at this kind of speed we should?
I think there's two. I mean, there's certainly more than this. I think when I think about it, I think about like two kind of key problems. And one of those problems is that for most people, right? Like we have all these surveys now that are like 85% of people in Fortune 500 companies are using AI. And that's a really stupid question to ask because there's no nuance to it, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, do you use AI? What do you mean? Like ChatGPT? Yeah, I use mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. you use the free version and you're using it like it's Google with extra steps. And I get it. Like this is 30 years of training of us looking at a page with a box, like a text box on it. And everybody goes, oh, I know what to do with that. Right. Mm-hmm. Like restaurants open near me that serve falafel, right? Like that's how we've been taught to interact with that screen. And so that is the primary use case. And that primary use case of using AI as if it's Google is, you know, doesn't help us, right? Doesn't like, it doesn't explain what the technology is capable of doing. It's not even a very good use of it, honestly, right? Mm-hmm. Like OpenAI and Anthropic and Google and everyone have done a really good job of trying to, if that's how you're going to use it, then we'll try to make it work in the way that you expect it to work. But it's not even a particularly good use of that technology, right? So you have this whole huge set of people that are like, yeah, I use it, but I use the free version of ChatGPT to ask questions that probably would have been just as good or better if I'd gone to you know, traditional Google. That gap between those, that set of people and what the actual capability is massive. And that is growing every day. So that's part one is that people, too many of the people in our industry, in any industry for that matter, but particularly in our industry, have this very narrow view of what that means. Right. And there's a percentage of those people. What's the first thing that everybody does with AI? Right. Everybody goes, do my job. You know, they open it up and they go, do my job. And then it doesn't do their job. And they're like, this thing's a piece of crap. Doesn't even do my job. Everyone says it does my job, but it doesn't do my job, except that that's not how you would do that. If you had someone who was, who was going to take over from you, you wouldn't do that. Right. You wouldn't hire someone and be like, do my job. And then walk out. You would give them a bunch of materials, right? And so that's a difference in mentality. So there's a lot of that, like thinking about it in this very narrow paradigm of using it like Google. And then the other thing that has happened that actually I think happened right at the end of 25 is that we crossed a threshold from this sort of like, we see where the future is going to go to like, this is happening right now. And you have like Opus 4.5 and you cross over that, like that holiday period where kind of everyone had a minute to take a break and then start using Claude Code, that coupled with Opus 4.5 at the time being way more capable than the previous models were, suddenly like cross this threshold into the gap between having an idea and executing that idea is absolutely collapsing. And it's collapsing so fast that we can't, like, you can't even keep track of it really. But that thread is like now taking off while we still have everyone at the station going, well, I don't, it's just like Google, right? Like, I don't get it. What is the thing that is so great about this? And so those two things combining right now are the thing that really kind of worries me from an adoption perspective, is that you have people who are the capability is accelerating. And there's too many of the people are still going like, yeah, but it doesn't, I don't know how to, it doesn't do anything, right? Like it just answers questions.
So if you were identifying the why behind this gap, because I would argue that, and you sort of made this argument too, which is that the rate of change is accelerating dramatically, is exponential at this point, right? The improvements on AI, they've gone from like 6-month rollouts to monthly rollouts, and the capabilities between, you know, just a year ago and now, just night and day, we can do things that we could only imagine a year ago. And yet the acceleration of adoption is pretty stagnant. You know, there's a few exceptions to that. So I would argue the gap is getting bigger, right? It's not closing. And that's a really scary thought, especially for industry. So is this fear? Is it a lack of time invested? Is it a lack of imagination and creativity from folks that aren't used to thinking differently? Like, what, how would you pin this? So where would you place the blame?
First of all, I don't think it's unique to our industry, right? Like the even people in our own industry, right? Like tend to be like, well, you know, travel's always kind of slow from a technology perspective, and destinations are even slower than that. I honestly don't think this is any different, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think if you watch, one of the things I watch a lot is the big four consultancies and the kind of stuff that they are doing, right? Because these are things that are important to understand, like canary in the coal mine, right? Like how will that industry adapt their billing by the hour, their right, like charging for intelligence, right? Like these are things that are really sort of vulnerable to this technology. And so I try to pay a lot of attention to what is happening there. And I got to tell you, man, like the news stories about KPMG, about, PwC, and how they have deployed and adopted the technology inside their own organizations are just appalling. And so mm-hmm. if we can't figure it out, this isn't about the tourism industry. This is everybody is having trouble trying to understand what to do with the technology. And so you ask the question of why. I mean, honestly, I think a big part of it is that a lot of this was theoretical 6 months ago, 3 months ago, even. And it's hard to translate from the like what could be into like, but this is happening right now and I could do these things right now. So I don't know if you guys are Claude users or not. I'm a big, I'm bullish on Anthropic and Claude, and have been for some time. The co-work is like a major difference. So somebody just asked me about this today. Okay. Co-work is a major shift in how we do knowledge work, but it is both like super pedestrian and also profound at the same time. Right? Like the mental shift that it takes to do that. It's not about figuring out which parts of my job it can do. It's about doing my job differently. And I think if we try to get back to the like words of wisdom about why this is happening, I think that is a really hard transition to make. I think it's easier to say, I'm going to take this task and give it to something else, which doesn't always work. That's not the problem. The problem is, how do I work differently with a non-human intelligence? And we don't know how to do that. Right. And there's no roadmap, because you can't just be like, I can't ask you, how are you using Claude Code right now? Adam, Stuart said you built something. I assume it was, so tell me, like, was it Claude Code? Was it Replit, Lovable? What
it was
you
Replit.
Doing?
Yeah, okay. It was. And I'll briefly say it because I said it on the podcast last week, but I walked into my hotel room in Cleveland at the DI Marcom Summit, and there was a digital print on the wall of the first patent, U.S. patent, for a single handle water faucet. And it was really cool, but when I looked at it, the first thing I thought was, my wife would never put this in our house because it's more industrial, not like a vintage, beautiful decor, if that makes any sense at all.
Sure.
And so I was like, man, I wonder if I could leverage AI. And it was just a thought exercise to see if it could happen. I said, I wonder if I could leverage AI to rebuild or to build a website where AI will scrape the U.S. patent database and find the patents that would be most conducive to a beautiful vintage print for a home that you could sell to interior designers, and surface those in such a way that that people would want it. And I started chatting with Gemini, and Gemini's like, yes, of course this is possible. Printify would be a great fulfillment partner, so that you could, when you sell a print, Printify will print and ship and fulfill. And in 48 hours, I built the entire website. I had built my Printify integration. And the only thing that wasn't done was the Stripe integration, because Stripe wants to verify that you're a legit person before they turn on your Stripe integration. It's live at parchmentandprogress.com. I'm waiting on my first digital print to get here. I ordered it at the end of last week. And so, who knows what's going to show up at my door. But I have never coded a thing in my life. I did it in a hotel in Cleveland in between conference sessions, right? And so the capability is just crazy compared to where it's been. I do want to go ahead. See, I will finish your thought, because I've got a couple thoughts I want to add.
So great example. Okay. But the problem with that, the problem with that example is, for someone else, is they go, okay, Adam already thought of that. So I can't do, like, I can't just do what you just did, right? Because you already thought.
But why?
And then the different issue, okay? Like the you have to be able to the thing I'm trying to get at is you have to be able to translate that, right? You have to be able to listen to that and see what the opportunity is, not do the like, okay, if I do exactly what Adam did, then I can also have a website that looks up patents and then sells posters.
So there's a creativity gap, is what you're saying. Like that ability to have an original thought or a thought that is a quantum leap in, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the analogies people use a lot is like people used to want faster horses and then the car came along, or they wanted more candles to light up their house and then the electric light bulb came up. You know, there's a bunch of those kind of analogies. But I think this is different because it's, you know, those were sort of one-to-one replacements. They were just using a technology to make more illumination or to move from point A to B faster. What you're saying is it takes a fundamental first principles reboot of what the actual objective of our role is, not the function of our role, but the objective of our role.
I totally agree with that. I think it's rolling up a level. And the one that I really like is that when electricity came to town, okay, all the factories replaced the light bulbs because they had gas bulbs in the factory, right? Mm-hmm. And all of the manufacturing or whatever, that was the the instant answers. It's like, okay, well, let's put light bulbs in there. It's safer. Right. People could work longer. It was brighter. You could see what you're doing. Like, it was a huge improvement, but it didn't have anything to do with what actually happened to those factories 20 years later, when the entire factory function was remapped around the existence of electric motors and, mm-hmm. you know, things that could be done that never could have been done before. Like that mm-hmm. light bulb part of it is the easy, obvious answer. And that's still where we're at, right? We're at the like, okay, well, let's use the electricity for light, but mm-hmm, that's not the thing that matters. The thing that matters is like, right. How will we deliver value using that technology in the future?
So we should be creating conveyor belts, not replacing our light bulbs, is what you're saying. Like, well, just and making the machines that produce it. So, yeah.
I want to speak a little bit as to why I think this is happening. And I want to separate out our industry and then, you know, global consumer adoption, because I don't think we should conflate those two. So the first reason I think in our industry that the adoption isn't happening as fast as it should. Stuart and I were at that Marcom Summit conference, and our complaint in one of the AI sessions was that the first 40 minutes of a 60-minute session was basically, what is AI? Starting from scratch. And it's like the first 40 minutes was not valuable to Stuart and I.
I walked out, and then the valuable, yeah. Like, I heard that the last 20 minutes was valuable, but
my problem is we are wasting so much stage time and education time rehashing the bottom 40%. We're catering to the bottom 40% of adoption, where if as an industry we would speak to the top 60% and help accelerate the adoption that's happening to this technology and showing people exactly how you can use it, not explaining what it is or why you should use it, but here's all the cool stuff that you can do now, and it's changing every week with AI, I think we would actually help people adopt that faster.
So here's my request to you guys. You're both with agencies and to everyone else in the industry. I had a really interesting conversation this week with a gentleman who's I can't mention the company. He's been a sales guy in technology for a long time. He works for one of the fastest growing AI companies in the world. And he said about 6 months ago in their world, something fundamentally changed. And what it was is, up until that point, every salesperson would go and pitch using a PowerPoint presentation, some kind of slide deck, right? And they'd tell people what they were going to do, what their solutions were. But he said about 6 months ago, we stopped telling them when we started showing them. We started building really good high-end prototypes when we went into the pitch. And he said it's fundamental game changer. And I feel like the agencies in the even, you know, the thought leaders in their industry, even at the conferences and stuff, I think you guys need to start giving real use cases. Like, don't say, hey, ChatGPT can do this or Claude can do this. Like, literally go in and show the function that anyone can adopt today. And to your credit, CA, you've done that with your group to a degree. But I'd like to see it go even further. Like, the DIs of the world and others need to be saying, here's a blueprint. Here's a solution. Here's how to do it, like step by step. I think honestly, our industry is only going to adopt it when we have that kind of level of spoon feeding going on.
I mean, so to go back to the conference thing, because I agree with you, but one of the biggest problems is it's really hard in this particular area. It's really hard to meet people where they are. And that's always a problem. Anytime you give a presentation,
we need to stop.
I think
them.
We should.
I think
meet
we,
the
that's
audience
the
where they are.
Don't. And like bring them with you. Like with catering to the lowest common denominator right now, and in any given room, the lowest common denominator is just now picking up ChatGPT for the first time. But that's doing us a disservice. We need to be to the highest common denominator. The person that's at the forefront, that's what we need to be showing. Like if you guys came out and said, hey, here's a complete blueprint to reinvent your sales team for group sales, that's got everything from prospecting to pitching and da-da-da. Here's the toolkit, like the operating system for a DMO. There's very few DMOs wouldn't be interested in that because they don't know how to do it themselves. They need to be spoon-fed. That's where the agencies, I think, role can really help us moving forward.
Well, and with the automations that are taking place, I think the reality is that's where we're going to have to go because tactical fulfillment is the days are numbered for a lot of the tactical fulfillment items. I think everything's going to roll up to strategy because AI will be able to execute on the tactical.
Yeah, unless it's holistic, like white glove version, right? So I think it's fair to say that are we going to need agencies to place an ad for us or to negotiate a deal for an ad on a platform 3, 4, 5 years from now? Probably not, you know? Mm-hmm. But thinking about what audience I target and what systems I'm using and how the workflow happens within our organization, I think that's the kind of stuff that agencies can step in and fill the void.
Yeah, there was I don't remember. It was New York Times or I don't remember what it was. Sometime last year. And I was talking about the jobs that are created by AI, not the jobs that are lost, right? And it categorizes those jobs as trust, right? Because somebody still has to be responsible for the decision. This is like, if, you know, if you talk about law or, you know, whatever sort of professional service, there's still somebody that has to be like, no, that's the, I'm going to stand behind that. Right. Cause I can get an answer from just as good or better from Claude about a legal contract, but I can't have Claude represent me in court. Right. And I can't go back to Claude later and say, you told me this contract was fine and it's not. So trust is part of that. And there's two sides to that one. And then the other one is taste. And taste is the, like, if everyone can create a campaign, then we still need to figure out which of those campaigns are the ones that are effective, right? Which ones will resonate? Which ones will people respond to you is the taste part of that. And then the third part of that is just like, they called it something else in there, but like the plumbing. Right. Somebody has to be able to, when the thing breaks, somebody has to be able to come in and go like, oh, this is, you know, we got to clear this drain, right? Like somebody has to figure out how to keep the thing running. Yeah. But there's quite a lot of opportunity just in those three different categories, trust, taste, and, you know, plumbing or whatever they called it.
I kind of like that. Trust, taste, and plumbing. Like the the first two go together so well.
Yeah. And then the third one just falls apart. I don't think, to be fair, I don't think theirs was alliteration either, but yeah, that's the way I think about that one.
Can we talk about global adoption real quick?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So I think we're wrong when we say that it's not being adopted very quickly globally. And the reason I say that is when you look at what happened with the iPhone and all the other technologies before it, there's an obvious bell curve. And I actually think the bell curve here is compressed even farther because of how fast it's been adopted. But the market shifted when it became uncool to have green text bubbles. And then everyone had to have an iPhone. Mm. Is that fair to say?
I don't know. Android still has a pretty big market share, man.
Big market share being okay. Well, globally, that's fine. I guess maybe I'm more exposed to the U.S. and that's, so let's say U.S. adoption to keep it correlating. But there came a point in the U.S. where if you had green text bubbles, you were disrupting the group chat, and especially with the younger generation, it wasn't cool to have green text bubbles anymore. And we've all felt it, right? Like there's all been that joke. That moment for AI is coming, and when it comes, everyone, even the lagging adopters, is going to be forced to adopt it. And I think when that happens, and I think actually the gap between that happening, the blue text moment, is going to be when convenience overtakes the usage of other things. Because right now there's still the convenience gap that if I don't know AI, I'm not going to be able to execute what I want to do easily. And I think once the convenience factor clears up, you're going to see a flood of even, you know, the users you wouldn't expect getting on and leveraging AI for all kinds of crazy things.
So just to sort of put this in context, this may be your bias, man, or your people. So according to this couple of sources, iPhone adoption in the U.S. is somewhere between 58 and 60%. So it puts Android at 40 to 42. But then if you look globally,
Android is the only alternative? I think it's fragmented outside of iPhone. I think everything's much smaller.
No, everything else is Android, man. I mean, it's based on Android. There's not really another.
It depends on how you slice it. Like if you're going to slice it as Samsung's version, but it's still
Android. Right? It's still non-blue.
So globally,
Android's actually 70 to 72% versus iPhone at 20 something. But I get your point. There's a tipping point, right? I think we're sort of moved the cheese.
That's not the point that you're making. The point that you're making is that there are signals. We don't know what they are, but there's a certain point where everyone's like, okay, like I have to do this because I can't be them. Here's what's super interesting about that. So my kids are both in university. My daughter is a freshman at the University of Iowa. And I have to tell you, the sentiment that is running across that group of people right now is anti AI. So I hear you that is the thing that happened with the iPhone. I think there will be those kinds of things that happen in terms of adoption, but there is a counterforce running here that did not exist when we were talking about adoption of the iPhone. For one, the whole thing is a much more complex system, but I think there are counterforces that are at play here that I think that will prevent adoption as much as they are driving adoption. Right.
What are those
counterforces? One of the things that's circulating right now, and I've heard this not just from my daughter and her friends, but from people, other organizations I work with, is like, we have a lot of concerns. And this was like the last thing that we did. The last time I was on the show, we talked about the environmental impact. And here it is again, it is still the same thing. And they're like, well, I don't think that's, you know, I shouldn't be using it because of the environmental impact. And like I said last time, it's not like, I'm not saying that there is an environmental impact. There is. I'm just saying it isn't any different than any other computer you're using for anything else.
Right. Yeah. If they're using TikTok and Instagram, then that's a total moot argument.
But that counterforce exists, and it's running the opposite of the, like, there's, you know, it's cool to do it this way, man. Right now it is cool to trash AI. Especially at that kind of age level.
Yeah, I think, but that she's at an age though where that's cool to just be anti-establishment, anti-status quo in general, right?
I mean, there's a university argument to be made for that,
right? I mean, that's what universities are—they're breeding grounds for like sort of the counter narratives and things like that. It's where, you know, I mean, going back to the Vietnam War, right? Where did all the protests come from? It came from kids on college campuses, you know. So.
I think that gets into a whole other
area. There's also an argument to be made that AI is going to take care of the university problem.
Well,
that was
a really broken system already. This is true all over the place, man. I mean, I think we talked about this one before too. Like, copyright was already broken. It just was allowed to limp along for decades, you know, and then now we're like, oh, this doesn't work anymore. Dude, it didn't work before. Like in the 90s when we did the Digital Millennium Act, that didn't fix anything. That made it worse.
Yeah, we just stopped using Napster and went to something else. It's interesting. I don't know that it's the friction, the resistance in terms of these deliberate kind of mechanisms that you're talking about, CA, that's going to inhibit adoption. I think it's the friction of the technology. Like, it's still a little – for someone to go download or go to Replit or go and create their own claw agent or something like that. It's friction, right? You have to be deliberate. Sure. You have to be confident in technology, or at least not fearful of technology. But I think we're really close to, you know, Gemini is going to be powering that Siri in a few months, right? I think we got Android now, or not Android, Chrome has its own agent sort of function built in for certain folks, certain users. it's only a matter of time where the friction of adoption is eroded in, and it just becomes commonplace, you know, where I can actually have a conversation with my phone to do the things versus having to go somewhere else, you know? So I think that's probably, to me, where the limitation is right now on consumer adoption. But that goes away
quickly.
Those
are the two tensions, right? Like, one of the things that we said at the beginning of this is that the gap between the people at the station and the people who are on the train is growing, not shrinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true from an adoption perspective. And then you go, okay, that's really alarming. And it is really alarming. But this is also a technology that can completely collapse that gap, mm-hmm. right? It just hasn't yet. And that's basically the same thing that you're saying here, is that this, different than other kinds of technology changes, this is a technology that once it gets good enough, that gap is erased.
It's gone.
Because I don't ever have to deal with this again. I don't have any of that friction. And mm-hmm. Once it's everywhere, then it's boring, right? It's electricity. And it's just boring.
And whenever you leave the station, you're caught up. Yeah. You can catch up immediately. You basically travel at the speed of light and catch up on the train whenever you leave the station.
Right.
I mean,
because you don't have to learn any of those things anymore.
That's right. And I think that's sort of the wait and see for some folks. Like, some people are sitting on the sidelines because they're like, well, what if I do all this investment of time now, and like next week there's an easier way to do that, right? And so I think for our industry, we've talked a lot about us being risk adverse, but we've also talked a lot about how the biggest risk of all right now is just sitting with the status quo and not taking advantage of it. This is potentially a world. There's certainly a world in the future where your website is less relevant in its current form. There's certainly a world where consumers' research of travel is going to be fundamentally different. There's certainly worlds where your competitors are going to be leveraging this technology in sophisticated ways that give them a massive competitive advantage. So the impetus is on everyone listening to this to invest the time. And I think that's it right now. You've got to go play a little bit and have – what does Jeanette call it? Wonder is what she calls it. A little bit of just a curiosity and an excitement about the things out there. And go break stuff. Go play and break stuff. Doesn't have to be mission critical things, right? But go figure out what Replit can do, and then have conversations with your teammates about it. And that might spur different conversations that create different ideas. But it's got to be a holistic approach. You got to get your whole team doing this. You got to book the time, invest the time, and then you got to have conversations.
Everybody in our space, and everybody in general, but in our space, needs to get really comfortable asking the question, what if this was better in our organization? What if we tried this idea? What if whatever? And then workshop it with AI and ask it, okay, how can I? Mm-hmm. And if you work together with AI in that way and say, what if things could get better by this, this, and this? And then say, okay, how do I accomplish that step by step? You can literally accomplish just about anything, if you'll follow that model.
I had a conversation with someone this past week that I was pushing them. They're on our team, and I was encouraging them to embrace AI a little more. And so I pointed out a couple of opportunities, and the conversation sort of went down an avenue of, they're not a technologist, right? They're a little nervous about technology, and they're like, well, I need help. I need someone on the team. Like, is this IT? Is it someone from marketing? Who's going to help me through this when I run into problems? I was like, dude, ChatGPT or Claude or whoever, like, pick whichever one you want, cowork. Like, they're your person. You don't need someone from IT. You just need to treat the AI like a person, not like Google, and you're going to be just fine.
But that's exactly the point that I was making earlier, is that it isn't a person. It's it's not a machine. I mean, it is, but it's not, you're not using it like you're using a toaster or a power drill, right? Mm-mm. But it's also not a person. And understanding that sort of difference, like how you work with a non-human intelligence, is what is critical to being able to figure out what you can do and how you can do that. So the underlying thing that I think is really critically important, that there is no replacement for. And this is where we get into the, like, you know, you go to a conference and, you know, we show more like demonstrations. And I totally agree with all of those things. But there's an underlying problem here that is, if you don't have the broad, like, experience to know what you can expect to get and not get out of an AI, then it's really difficult to get anything done. And the only way to get that experience is to have it. I can't give it to you. I can't give it to you in a book. I can't shortcut it. I can't, this is like I can give you a wood shop and I can give you blueprints and I can give you all of the tools, but I can't make you a master cabinet maker. That's a choice. That is a journey that you have to go on your own to decide to do that. And that underlying experience is the most critical part of this. And that's what's missing is the, I don't know what to do or how to do it. Totally understand. The only way to do that is to have enough experience with the platforms and the tools to be able to say, I know I can get this out of it and I'm going to change the way that I work so that I can use that piece to accomplish the goal that I have.
But even so that example, if somebody said, I'm a marketing manager in this destination and I want to be more effective with AI, ChatGPT, what are my step-by-step recommendations that you have for me to incorporate AI into my job? And you will be shocked at the answer. Shocked.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And not all of those are relevant, but that's the, like, knowing which thing is relevant is the important part of this.
Is the job.
The last, I know we're coming down to the last minute. The last thing that I have on my list that I want to say to this audience, to you guys and to the audience, is that this has been coming for a long time, right? Like for 2-3 years, we've seen this sort of this change happening. I'm saying that happened now. Okay. 2026 is it. This is the time where you can actually do meaningful things in your job. Right. And so if you're sitting on the fence because you're waiting for the, like, this is the right time, you know, is this the right time for me to do it? I'm saying this is it. This is March of 2026. This is the time.
And what you're saying, you have a specific tool you would recommend people start with? Like if they wanted the tangible next step for this audience, what is that instruction to them right now?
I mean, just today, okay, just in the last couple of days, you've gotten a lot of similar tools that are coming out from other platforms, okay? But I continue to be bullish on Claude from the set of tools that it has. And you go from, you know, Claude Chat, you have projects, you have skills, you roll up from there to Cowork has plugins, all of this stuff, to your point, you can build them. There's a plugin to build plugins. There's a skill to build skills, right? Like you can do all of the things using the tool that you have. And then Claude Code is kind of the fourth leg of that thing. So if you're asking me, and I have 3 different organizations that I'm doing this with right now, where I've said, we're just going to use this because it is now time to figure out how to use this tool and not how to talk about it conceptually. But having said that, Copilot, Microsoft Copilot has a new thing that just came out today that's also called Cowork. Does it work as well as Claude? I don't have any idea, but those tools will continue to come into play. So if you're already invested in a platform, fine. But man, in 2026, if you're using the free version of ChatGPT, stop. You don't have any idea what is going on if you're using the free. You should be paying, especially in business. If you're doing work, you should be paying for it. Your company should be paying for it.
That, I mean, that's the best advice, is if you're an executive and you have, say, over a budget for a DMO, if you're not paying for a paid subscription to at least one of these tools for every employee, you're out of your mind at this point. You're absolutely derelict of duty, I would say, because you're doing a disservice to not just your employees, but your community at this point.
And so many organizations are running on G Suite, and Google's AI products integrate so well with email and Google Docs and all that stuff. Try that first. I mean, you're already paying for it. Your organization's already paying for it if you're on G Suite. So if your operation runs there, start there.
Mm-hmm. And they do. They have really good models. They don't have it's so frustrating with Google because their models are really good, but they don't have the tooling. They don't have the harness for it.
Yeah.
Even though they're the ones that are holding all of the cards. Right.
Yeah.
And if they could just get the cards onto the, if all of this stuff worked together, it would be absolutely unstoppable. But I absolutely agree. Right. Like this is stuff that is available right now. I mean, Christ, the Google gives away tons of stuff for free anyway. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can start with Gemini and not really even pay anything, even though I don't think that's a great example. I think you should be paying.
And Gemini tells me when it runs up against its capabilities and what tool should I use when Gemini can't help me. It tells me where to go. It's what told me to use Replit when I built that other site.
And that's another one, right? Like, you should definitely be using thinking models, right? And that's part of the reason to pay, is the thinking model is way, way better at exactly that thing, at just going like, hey, man, this is not like, I can't help you here, right? But here's a different way that you could go about doing that.
This is great, man. So yeah, you're welcome back on the show anytime. This is an education. Well, hopefully we've
inspired. I always enjoy the conversation. So I really always appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. So yeah, if they want to reach out to you or learn more about what you're up to, where can they do that?
I'm on LinkedIn. That's the best place. And I post 2-3 times a week. So
awesome. Adam, any final words from you, and where can they find you?
No, CA, it's been great to have you come at this point for several episodes and talk about AI. I mean, I really feel like some of these conversations are what's going to be needed for the industry to be pushed forward. And my challenge to the three of us for next time is, I want the entire episode to be for the top 40% of people that are really leveraging AI. And let's get a little more advanced in our discussion. I think it'll be really valuable for everybody. You can find me, Adam, at thebrandrevolt.com, on LinkedIn, Adam Stoker, or of course on Tourism IQ.
Great. You can find me at Stuart.Butler at visitmodelbeach.com or on LinkedIn. Appreciate you guys listening. Drop a like, subscribe, review. Adam will read them out for you. We ran out of time. We got a couple I wanted to read, but we'll do that next episode, hopefully, Adam. Maybe we'll do it at the beginning of the show so we don't run out of time. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. My condolences to Mildred.
You're just trying to, you're trying to bring it back. Trying to save it.
That's my ending right there.
You know
that's
exactly good. Why I said that.
Yeah. It took me a second. I was like, who's Mildred? And then I forgot.